Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. In this half hour, our panelists are Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Katie Misick of DTN. She's their markets editor in Omaha, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Matt Bennett, I'd like to start with you. You were on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and started, I believe, in South Dakota.
Yeah, I started in South Dakota, and our route actually went due south of Sioux Falls. We were on one of the lower routes as far as production goes. We saw a lot of corn that was, hurt pretty bad by excess water. The soybean pod counts were still fairly good, though. Everything was lush and green. We moved on down through Nebraska. The first day we were in northern Nebraska, mostly dryland corn. It looked pretty good, but we didn't see any real big yields. I don't think we had a 200 bushel yield in northern Nebraska. And then the next day we moved from Grand Island over to Nebraska City, and we were in predominantly irrigated corn for much of the day. And I believe we only had two yields that came in over 200. We were a little surprised by that. We saw a lot of disease pressure. A lot of reduced stand counts, but we still ended up with maybe a 170, 165, 170 average yield. So it wasn't terrible corn by any means. It just wasn't what I was expecting based on USDA. And then we moved north yesterday up to Spencer, and the crop in Iowa looked pretty good. You know, I mean, it was good, but it definitely was stressed in that southwestern portion of the state, just as we had assumed it was, due to all the excess moisture they had early in the year. The closer we got to Spencer, the better the crops got. But I think our average yield yesterday was still only 167, which really surprised us. Today, our average yield was 165 in mostly Minnesota. We had pretty good corn in places, but we also had some that were kind of waterlogged as well. Saw a lot of nitrogen deficiency. We saw a lot of reduced stands. And you know, we were probably one of the lower routes, though, because we were keeping in contact with some of the other guys, and I know that they ran into some really good corn in Minnesota. So I think that by the luck of the draw, I just happened to be on some routes that maybe didn't have quite as good a yield in corn as what some of my peer group had.
No, I know I ran. I talked to Chip Flory during the closing market report earlier today, actually, and he was running a route in Minnesota that was running just south of I-90. Which I thought it should have been a pretty good route, but he was not impressed by the corn. What did your route, where was your route taken?
Okay, our route went up, we would have been south of I-90, a little bit farther maybe than what he was. We weren't very far into Minnesota, and then we ended up going up to Highway 30, and then we took 30 all the way into Rochester. So, you know, we were expecting really big corn yields, especially they say the southern part of Minnesota is significantly better than the northern part of Minnesota. So we were very surprised, because I was thinking that based on what the USDA was giving us and seeing what the scouts had seen in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, that maybe things were coming in a little bit lower in Indiana and Ohio than what even the USDA was at. Yeah, it would seem to me Minnesota and I would have to prop everything up, especially after seeing Nebraska. So that really wasn't the case for our group anyway.
All right, and then let's turn our attention to the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Katie Misick has been traveling that. She's with DTN Progressive Farmer and their markets editor. You can find her online on the DTN websites. Katie, thanks for taking the time. Tell me about your route, where you begin. You probably saw a whole lot of rough corn to begin with, I would think.
Oh, we absolutely did, Todd. My route started out in Columbus, Ohio. and we went northwest all the way up to Paulding County. And what we saw in Ohio was an incredible amount of variability within every field. We pulled our 5th, 8th, and 11th ear, and they're all at different maturity levels. The stands were incredibly uneven, and denitrification was everywhere, all through northeastern Ohio, northern Indiana, and even northeast Illinois. I saw a lot of denitrification this week and a lot of wavy yellow corn. I would say our poorest corn in Ohio was in Paulding County. We saw a decent field beans in Ohio, nothing excellent, and it was still blooming, so there's a lot left to go. Northeastern Ohio was incredibly rough. My route's average for that day on corn was 96 bushels per acre. We saw one field where you could tell where the tile lines were because you would have 4 to 5 rows of corn that looked fantastic, could yield 200 bushels, and you'd go 10, 15 feet away, and it would be nothing. So there's an incredible amount of variability within each field. On soybeans, they were consistent, but they were below last year. They looked a little better in northeastern Indiana. Northwestern Indiana was rough. It wasn't as bad as northeastern Indiana. Our average in that area was about 120 bushels per acre on corn, and our pod counts were a little bit better. But as we moved into Iroquois County in Illinois, we saw our route average really dropped. We had two samples that were in the 80s, I would say, on corn. But the beans looked really pretty good. We, in northwestern Indiana and northeastern Illinois, we were actually really impressed by the crop health. It looked pretty good from the road. We didn't see the SDS and the white mold like we were expecting to. And that, for me, was kind of the theme of the whole tour. The corn in Illinois, as we moved southwest toward Bloomington, had a really unique pattern. Iroquois County was the worst. There's 8 in 80. And then in Kankakee, northern Livingston County, we had two samples that were about 120. And as we got into southern Livingston and McLean, our samples jumped up to 188 and 187. The corn definitely got better as we moved towards Bloomington. When we left the next day and went from Bloomington up through the Quad Cities to Iowa City, we saw excellent corn. We had an average of about 200 bushels per acre in Illinois before we hit sort of the sandy soil that's along the Mississippi River. And we had a few issues there, but we pulled our highest sample in Bureau County, Illinois, 233 bushels per acre, right around the town of Cherry. We also got an incredible pod count there, well up over 2,000, with a lot of four bean pods. Everything was wet. It had just gotten a great soaking rain overnight, so we really think the beans have a lot of potential in northwestern Illinois. In Iowa, we actually were surprised by how things looked when we got inside the fields. In Scott, Cedar County, Muscatine, a lot of scouts reported that there were pollination issues with probably related to too much moisture at the time when it was pollinating. So there were some surprises there. I think people wanted to see much better corn in Iowa yesterday. We pulled a few samples today on my route where it was kind of averaging around 200 bushel per acre corn in Iowa. We saw incredibly tall corn, but were disappointed in the ear size relative to the plant size. Our average ear length was down today, and it was something that we found very interesting given the amount of vegetative growth in corn. So if something is a little perplexing, we think the plants put too much energy into the wrong part of their reproductive cycle. And our sample, we took one sample in Minnesota that was about the same as Iowa. What we saw today, though, was deep green, beautiful-looking corn and emerald green soybeans. The color, the stand was so much different than what we saw in Ohio and Indiana. I mean, it was a tale of two crops.
It was a tale of two crops. But did that tale tell you something different than what you thought when you first started out into the field this year?
Well, this is my fifth crop tour, so comparing to the 5 other years, it was far more variable. I think we were surprised that the tour numbers came in 20 bushels below USDA in Ohio and Indiana. But I'm also told by the farmers that that the tour can't cover the entire state. And what the farmers from Indiana told me was that when the further south you go, the better it gets. And the area the tour doesn't sample is one of the best areas of the state this year. So there is some difference there. One big observation I would say is that there's cr- kernel depth is going to make a really big difference this year. If you compare our yield numbers with what we had last year, if the TOR numbers come out about the same, we're still going to have a smaller crop because the kernels are much more shallow.
Hey, can I ask them a quick question?
Yeah.
Just for, I guess, personal knowledge, and some of my clients were asking too, but well, I was just curious, you know, what's the actual process for a carload of you guys when you pull up to the field? You know, where do you go to the field to check? How far in? That type of thing. Because I've heard both of you mention, you know, look good from the road, and then you got in the field, and that's something that our group's been hitting on basically all year. So, you know, I was just curious what the process was and how far between each sample do you guys go?
What we do when we find a cornfield next to a soybean field, we usually try and go 20 miles between stops. And so that's how we select what field we choose. When we sample corn, we walk in past the end rows and take 35 paces, and that's where we start taking our sample. We count the number of ears in 30 feet of two side-by-side rows and pull the 5th, 8th, and 11th ear. Then we go back to the car usually, and we measure the amount of grain on the ear, and then we count the kernel numbers around and put that into our formula to get our sample.
And how do you do the soybeans?
On soybeans, we walk out to fields kind of randomly. We generally try and, you know, keep it consistent and not always picking the best spots, not always picking the worst spots. And you measure out 3 feet. You count the number of plants in 3 feet. You pull three random plants, and you count the pods on them, and you average the pods per plant to put that into your math formula. And the soybean numbers are divided by whatever the row width is, so you can see a lot of variability between bean plants that are planted on 15-inch rows, 7.5-inch rows, or 30-inch rows.
Matt, you traveled through that western part of the United States, a place that you really haven't been in and seen for a while. You've been in and out of fields. I know you've been feeling that this corn market needed to put a little more oomph into it based on what you thought the size of the crop should be, just kind of looking out the back door sometimes, and sometimes feeling that there was an awful lot of rain in many other spaces across the Corn Belt. Did you get more friendly to the marketplace over the last week?
That's a great question. You know, I think to me, I was really expecting to see better crops than what I saw. I have to think that Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota are going to have to carry Ohio and Indiana, and to an extent, Illinois. I'm not so sure that I totally agree at this point that we're at 171 just yet. There's such a variation in in yields, as Katie was saying, it's going to be really tough to get a firm grip on what an 80-acre field is going to make if, 15, 20 acres of it is pretty much zero. You don't know how much the rest of it's going to be decent because you don't know how much nitrogen was lost. And so, you know, obviously there's a lot of things that goes into that question. And I would say from my vantage point, I thought 168.8 was too high. And I still think 168.8 was too high. And I think moving forward, one thing that's going to happen, in my opinion, is, you know, once they actually find out what ear weights are, and we don't have an implied ear weight that's similar to last year when ear weights were phenomenal, I think that once those get ratcheted down to what they really are, it's going to make a big difference in yield. And so, you know, I don't know how much they'll take out of it in September. I know they don't usually take huge chunks at a time. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see us drop maybe a good 3 to 4 bushel even in the month of September.
Jason Clapp, time to bring you into the conversation there in Lafayette, Indiana, from Risk Management Commodities. You have in-house an agronomist. I know that you have all probably been talking about the crop tour and what the numbers look like. What kind of discussions have you had? What's the agronomist been telling you?
The discussions really mirror what Matt just said there. I mean, you know, when he thinks Illinois 171 or 2 is probably too high, we all had a big belly laugh when the USDA report came out and they said Indiana was 158 because it's just not possible when you lose a third of the state and it's the best ground in Indiana. So that's, you know, those are the discussions we've been having. We think that the production on this crop is going to be closer to 13 billion bushels than it is to 14. So You know, it's one of those, I believe a 168.8 yield from the USDA, but I need to see it on 79 million harvested acres instead of the 81.1 that they put down. So,
Katie, very quickly, were all the routes north of Indianapolis that ran through Indiana?
No, they were not. Some actually went southeast of Indiana and went across the south, and they saw much better corn in that part of the state than they did in the northern parts. But there were several routes that went south of Indianapolis.
And I'm trying to establish something here, Jason, because I just don't know. I can tell you in Illinois, once you get south of Route 16, and while there's a lot more corn today than there was 10 years ago and a lot better corn than there was 10 years ago, the total production amount south of that area has a lot less impact than what you would have north of Route 16. Is there a division line somewhere in Indiana that's similar, do you know?
Yeah, you could probably say that Highway 24 corridor is going to be some of the best ground in the state through, you know, the Lafayette, Remington, Tipton, Indiana, over to south of Fort Wayne is going to be the ground that has the biggest potential to throw out high yields, you know, barring the fact that someone in southern Indiana would have an irrigation unit. Again, that piece of ground would be of higher value too, but that would be the line that comes to my mind.
Yeah, so I'm trying to establish when you had your belly laugh because you were thinking about probably Route 24 and the total number of bushels and production that was produced in that area would be my guess. And the idea that there's just an awful lot of corn and a lot of – that's a really good soybean area. Have you been, Jason, been out? What does the soybean crop look like in your area in particular?
They've been looking better. Our problem here lately is the rains sure seem to stop at the state line, and they get very, very scattered as they move through Indiana into Ohio to where – you know, yesterday Chuck and I went down to Sullivan, Indiana from Lafayette and put on a meeting, and that's how I drive home to the farm. So I see that crop quite a bit. And even this week, it's just starting to die. I mean, it's just dead. There's no water to be had. It's tired. It's had enough for the year, and it's given up. So, you know, I don't know what our soybean yield would be, but I wouldn't think it would be near the record, kind of like they've got us pegged, you know, close to 50, I think, is what they had for Indiana. I would think it'd be somewhere south of that.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the agronomic things and stay in this realm, and maybe Katie and Matt, you can discuss what you've seen. I know, Katie, you told me that you saw an awful lot of yellow corn. I mean, it's nitrogen deficient. It's just running out of gas, relatively speaking. Was your perspective, Matt, on the western leg that also was a problem for them? They didn't get nearly as much rain, though they had a great deal of rainfall early in the season all the way across the state of Illinois or of Iowa. I think everybody across the Midwest had more than 6 inches a month in May and June. And July, if I remember correctly, and that's kind of a keystone to a turn on as to when a crop is going to be good or not so great.
You know, one thing that we saw pretty consistently, whether we're in South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, or Minnesota, is nitrogen loss. I mean, it wasn't in every field by any stretch of the imagination, but just driving by on the highway doing the windshield survey, there's a lot of places you can tell that had the low areas were just lime green and they just didn't look very good whatsoever. We were in probably at least a good third of the fields that I was on the entire tour that had some nitrogen deficiency. We were seeing a lot of brown leaves down low, and we were just seeing plants that had run out of gas. And, you know, we actually ran into some fields in Nebraska that were pretty much in a hard dent that had shut down. There was more going on than nitrogen deficiency in those fields. I mean, we did find a fair amount of disease pressure in Nebraska, but, you know, bottom line is there's a lot of nitrogen loss in other states other than Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio.
All right, so I want to take up some local issues, relatively speaking, and talk about basis. And this is probably good for folks that would be in the southwestern corner of Iowa, northeastern, northwestern corner of Missouri, in the Lafayette area, Watseka area of Illinois and Indiana, where basis, it appears, will have to do a lot of the work. I know Bill Gentry from your shop, when I had him in Watseka last night, Jason was talking about how much work basis was going to have to do. How do farmers handle this for corn And how often do they, especially, and I want to talk about old crop for the moment, what kinds of things can they do right now for old crop, and or should they do it for old crop corn?
Well, I think for starters, you know, if you're one of those areas that's going to be really hurting for production and you've held old crop corn to this point, you might as well carry it a little bit longer and start talking to, you know, local merchandisers and even merchandisers that you might not talk to. You know, they may seem too far away and out of your normal bailiwick, but I think this year, guys with corn, especially northern Indiana and, you know, these parts like Katy we're talking about, you're going to be more in the driver's seat than you've been in a while, as far as dictating what price you're going to get out of the basis. So I would be proactive on calling people and then, you know, proactive on making sure they have offers and they know, you know, you have corn and they know what you want to sell it at. Whenever I was a grain buyer, those were always the guys I called first because that's where I knew the corn was and that was going to be my quick and easy fix. And I think you're going to have a lot of merchandisers looking for that this year.
Yeah. So, Matt, is your experience the same thing? You wanted to know where that corn was. If farmers told you, you were able to call them back up and make them a decent offer when you were a grain elevator operator?
Well, yeah. You know, the thing is that that's definitely the case. I think this year what's interesting is guys have corn on the farm, and then they got to make a decision here pretty soon, but not near as soon, in my opinion, as the guys that have corn stored at the elevator, because, you know, do they want to start that storage, minimum again, or will they be able to negotiate that? Now, maybe in some of these areas where corn is not going to be so plentiful, maybe the elevator manager will be willing to talk to them about maybe not charging them the minimum to go ahead and roll that. And be able to speculate just a little bit longer on the price of corn. But, you know, bottom line is if you have to pay the minimum, it's pretty tough to do it at this point, depending on how much you've already, how long you've already been paying storage, and especially at the price levels we're at.
Well, what I just really like to talk about a little bit here is soybeans. I've had a lot of discussions with farmers about how they think USDA maybe overestimated last year's crop. And that could become something that becomes a real issue towards the end of September. What are you guys seeing and thinking about soybeans as far as what farmers should be thinking about, what crews and events should they be thinking about their marketing plans for old crop and this new crop?
I think the basis is something to look at there. And, you know, it's been an issue. We've got a plant here in Lafayette that's been paying, 60, 70 over for some time on the basis. And I would think that issue would continue on into new crop. So I think you look there first.
And, Matt, of course, Katie's referring to the grain stocks report that comes out at the end of the September. It'll balance the books. For the last marketing year, will they have to adjust, and how much of an impact might it have? What are you looking for?
Well, you would sure think that it would. I mean, first of all, you know, last year I think we were even tighter than what we all thought we were, and that was evidenced by the fact that the basis got so hot. You know, obviously we couldn't get soy meal out of the southeast, but, you know, there was a lot going on there with soy meal basis getting hot and soybeans getting hot and putting a dollar flush back into the market during the end of harvest. I think going into this year, it's pretty tough for a soybean producer. I think there's a lot of acres of beans. That's probably the one wild card that maybe could help you. Who knows how many are lost total, because I know obviously in Missouri there's been more lost than what we originally thought. You know, the thing is, though, is that we do have a plentiful supply worldwide of beans, and it appears to me that we're going to have a pretty decent crop this year, even though we had a rough start. I don't know what kind of a frost potential we're going to be looking at, and there are a lot of late-planted beans, but I do know this. On the western leg of the crop tour, I didn't encounter any dry dirt anywhere, and whenever I see moist ground all over four different states, and that indicates to me that in those areas, what beans are there are going to have the potential to be pretty darn good beans. So I'm a little bit concerned about supply.
What do you think about the potential for prevent plant to change?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think that the guys I talk to in Missouri, of course, no matter what number comes out, they're going to say it's higher than that. And I understand, because they were just hit with a deluge of rain this year. But you know, it's going to be tough. It's really tough to figure that all out. It's tough to figure out what the prevent plant numbers are going to be. It's tough to figure out what the impact of all the zeros we're going to see are in these fields. But I do think that acreage being adjusted down in this last report is probably a start. I think it's probably going to come down a little bit more, but I don't think it'll come down, you know, another 800,000 or anything like that. I can see maybe another half again, just shy of a half a million bushels being taken out due to prevent plant. But that's just my guess.
Jason, will it be acreage or yield that drives the marketplace if it goes, if one of those two is going to go lower?
I would say you could pick either one, because really what it, to me, what that boils down to is a production number and what it makes the ending stocks do. So either a reduction in either of those is could help. My fear is becoming that this lackadaisical demand situation that we found ourselves in here with exports being extremely slow could cap some of that enthusiasm to go higher. So, you know, we may not run as high as some guys would like to think right off the bat.
Hey, were you impressed, by the way, today with the Chinese purchase of soybeans from the United States, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, we had good exports today. We kind of topped out, or were at the higher end of what most of trade was expecting. To me, you know, the export situation is going to be an issue until the day it's not. And by that, I mean they can fix that within, you know, a month of good buying would get us caught up to where we need to be. But the problem is it this month, next month, or next July? Just nobody will know. So
let's now get a final word from each of you. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I think the crop tour this week probably affirmed my belief that the corn number is definitely too high. I think as far as soybeans go, you know, originally when I saw that number come out, I thought that it was too high. But at this point, it still might be too high. I don't know if it's near as too high as what I thought it was originally. So I think moving ahead marketing-wise, I think especially as far as corn goes, we're just going to have a little bit of patience. I think the market's going to have a good amount of support under it. And moving forward, if we're patient and, you know, set some price goals in place that are realistic, I think that we can be in a lot better shape than what we are today if we just kind of bide our time a little bit.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with Channel Seeds. He's based in Windsor, Illinois. Jason Clapp is at Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Echo some of what Matt said there is, you know, for patience for now and you know, start putting some of the legwork into the marketing side of it, you know, before we get to the field. My feeling is September will go pretty quick here when we get into it, and, you know, guys will start harvest maybe a little sooner than they anticipated, especially if some of those good basis deals are out there. So, you know, take some of this downtime here to prepare yourself, and good luck, everyone, this fall. So.
And we'll finish up today with Katie Misick. She's the markets editor for DTN out of Omaha, Nebraska. First, Katie, how do folks find what you've written? And then any final word you have?
You can find me on Twitter at KatieMDTN, or you can go to www.dtnpf.com for all of our latest news and updates. Well, what we saw was that rain doesn't necessarily make grain, and tall plants don't necessarily make more either. We saw a lot of things we didn't expect and a whole lot of variability. Crops, it's just going to be a very interesting year.
Thanks to Katie Misick, Jason Clapp, and Matt Bennett for being our guest on this August 20 edition of Commodity Week. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.